Than Talent Radio.
More Heart Than Talent Radio is brought to you today by the Customer's Personalities Cheat Sheet. If you own a business, you're in sales, or you want to have a better understanding of how to connect and close your prospect, the Customer Personalities Cheat Sheet is designed to shortcut the process so you can finally close sales by knowing exactly what to say to the personality you are talking to. To get your free copy now, go to goldenmastermind.com/free. Tonight's guest is making her first appearance on More Heart Than Talent. And the woman I'm about to introduce definitely deserves to be on this call because she has a very unique niche, and she is someone that I refer to many of my clients to really take their tone, their depth, their pitch, their voice, and their energy to the next level. Paula Penna is a voice coach, multipreneur, businesswoman with a passion for assisting people to find their voice, literally and figuratively. Paula has over 30 years and over 50,000 hours of coaching hours in voice alone. She is the owner of Music Makers International Academy in Connecticut, where she has been the executive director for over 20 years while raising her two daughters as a single mom. She's also an executive in a global health and wellness network marketing company. She coaches speakers as well as singers and is in the process of publishing her first book. She is passionate about using diaphragmatic breathing and breath energy in order to preserve vocal health and become a more powerful and effective presenter and speaker. Using breathing techniques from meditation, yoga, philosophy, and psychology, Paula uniquely combines these with her strong foundation in classical singing technique to help her clients create congruent vocal energy. Paula, great to have you on tonight's call.
Thank you so much for having me here, Jeff. I'm excited.
Paula, you're now in the More Heart Than Talent Hall of Fame for being on this call. So your bio now goes in a folder with the great Jim Rohn, Mark Victor Hansen, Susan Sly, John Assaraf, Dr. Joe Dispenza. So it's an honor to have you on this call tonight.
It is an absolute honor and thrill for me to be here tonight. Thank you very much for having me.
I've had the privilege of referring you many of my clients, and I know that they have received great value. We'll cover some of what you do, but I want to cover a little background on how you actually became a singer, owning a music school, and what really inspired you to be a musician before you ever became a voice coach.
Absolutely. I'd love to talk about that.
How did it all begin for you as a musician, Paula? What was it that inspired you as a child to become a musician?
Well, Jeff, my first memory, I was 3 years old, and my first memory was actually seeing a piano. And it was like a huge light came on, and at that point I knew I wanted to be a musician from 3 years old.
And then what happened with that career?
Well, I actually began dance lessons early, and I got very good at being a dancer. I took dance lessons from the time I was five all the way up until I was about 22 in college. And in elementary school, I started, just like everybody else does, singing in the choir, and then I took up the clarinet. I had always wanted to take the piano. Unfortunately, my parents were not in a position to be able to pay for private lessons, so I had to figure that out by myself. So I was extremely involved in my school music program and ended up teaching myself piano. And when I was in seventh grade, I had actually been a really, really shy person, extremely shy, really, really quiet voice. All of my report cards said to my parents, Paula is very, very smart. She has great ideas, but we cannot hear her. And suddenly when I was in seventh grade, I was in choir, and my choir teacher chose me to be the soloist in the concert for the winter. And myself and everyone around me said, Paula? Me? And that's the first time that I discovered that I actually had a voice.
That is a great story. And then as you graduate from high school, what do you begin to do with your musical career aspirations and talents?
Well, I graduated high school, and I had auditioned for colleges, and I was able to get into Manhattanville College, which is in Purchase, New York, right about 27 miles north of Manhattan. And I studied music education with vocal performance and piano performance combined. and was very, very involved in composing, playing piano, singing. That was my first introduction to singing classically, which I did not know at that point I would have an interest in. But I absolutely loved that it stretched me. It was so, so much different than singing in my high school rock band.
Now, you have been, as a musician, you have been in a number of bands and played with multiple superstars. What was that experience like?
Oh, my goodness. In high school, I was in our high school's main rock band, and we did Battle of the Bands. In fact, everybody that was in my high school rock band, every one of us are professional musicians to this day. So that was pretty incredible. I was also in I did a lot of Broadway-type musicals, community theaters, church theaters, high school musicals. I grew up in Long Island. I was 45 minutes outside of Manhattan, and everything was Broadway. And I was able to also direct when I was still in high school and then direct again when I was in college. So I had the Broadway experience as well as the rock. And in my choir, we did classical singing mainly, but it wasn't until I was in college that I got to find out what it was like to study classical voice.
Paula, many people will say the term struggling artists, struggling musicians. Musicians don't make a living. Well, music is like any endeavor. It's based on a principle called the law of the few. And the talented people don't always succeed. And you were able to take your musical skills and you actually monetized it. As a business owner, businesswoman, how did you take your music passion and then create a livelihood out of it?
Well, Jeff, one piece of advice that I had gotten from my dad early on was to do what you love and the money will come. And so in high school, I actually had also found out that I was very, very talented in debate and in political science and in law. So I had professors that were trying to talk me into going through a law career, and they felt that I would be a very, very good trial advocate to be an attorney that actually went into the trial. Because I have a good voice, I'm good on my feet, I'm passionate. But I had to make a decision on, gosh, I can go into this law career, which I also was very passionate about that, and probably make oodles of money and monetize the heck out of it. Or I can go into music, which there's absolutely no promise of making it in. And ultimately, I remembered my dad's advice. And the thing I was most passionate about when I really went to sleep at night and had to think about this was music for me is a spiritual endeavor. It's the core of who I am. And if I don't do that, I'm never going to really fully self-actualize.
Don't forget the song by Survivor. You remember Survivor, the band Survivor, who...
Survivor, yeah.
Right, so they had a few hits. They had at least three hits. A Chicago band that changed their lead singer a few times, but they're very well remembered and famous for the song Eye of the Tiger. And in the song Eye of the Tiger, it says, "Don't trade passion for glory."
That's right.
Remember those words?
I remember that, yes. Absolutely.
Now, before we get into what the real value I want you to deliver is really how to find your voice, you start a music school, is that correct? And you have run a successful music school for a number of years. So that's part of where your 50,000 hours, five times the 10,000-hour habit comes from. Tell us just a little bit about what it's been like to have a music school and who are some of the best students that you've ever mentored.
Oh, wow. Well, I started my music school in 1996. So I think this is my 21st year, and I had been a public school music teacher for 4 or 5 years, which is where I thought I would stay, and it just turned out to not be my home. Then I was an administrator teaching students how to teach at Manhattan School of Music in New York City, and when I became pregnant with my first daughter, I decided that I really needed to go for my dream now. I wanted to be a full-time mom, and I also wanted to keep working in my career. And so even though I was pregnant, I had just moved to Connecticut, I didn't know anybody, I didn't have any money, my husband didn't have a job, I decided that that was the time to start a business. And I did, and it ended up becoming a multi-7-figure income business over the past 21 years, and I was able to raise my kids, who are now 17 and 20, and almost 21 years old, and not miss a thing. I've had some extraordinary students, really extraordinary students, and my students my philosophy is not that people should study music so that they can become professional musicians. I think that music is an integral part of everybody's life. We live, eat, and breathe it every single day, whether we realize it or not, and it's something culturally that everybody should know something about. So some of my best students are students that are now doctors and lawyers or homemakers or business people or accountants that are passing on that music to other generations, and they're still using it in their lives. Some of my voice students that have gone on to have professional careers, one of my favorite is Brooke Stevenson. She is out in Los Angeles, California, and I had taught her voice and piano from the time she was 12 or 13 years old until 18, and she ended up saying, no, I don't want to study music in college, which I was shocked at because she was so talented and so unique. And then her first semester into college outside of Boston, she called me and she said, Paula, you know, I really, really want to study music. And she just chickened out the first time, I think. And so I helped her prepare for the Berklee College of Music, which is one of the top conservatories in the world in Boston. And she was able to get into that and a couple of other schools that all fought for her. And now she is a professional musician, singer, songwriter, pianist in L.A. She works for Universal, and she had worked for Interscope before, so she's making a fantastic career out of it. She's one of my all-time favorites.
That is awesome. So let's get into the real content of what I want you to share with people, finding my voice. Now, myself being a coach of 21 years, plus also I have a degree in radio and television, so I learned how to write sales copy. I was an on-air personality in both radio and TV. In my campus broadcasting station, I also did voiceovers, television commercials, and was a sportscaster part-time for a TV station in a Fox affiliate for the very first year that Fox was on the air. So I understand the value of having a voice and being able to use your diaphragm, etc. But let's share with a little bit on why many people don't have a voice, the cause that creates the effect of why they do what they do, and what you do to assist people to really find that voice.
Absolutely, Jeff. So what I find in my teaching, singing is, and I'm seeing it more with my professional clients that are not singers but are in a position, in a profession where using their voice more effectively makes a huge difference for their success. What I find is that most people don't breathe right. And it's a shame because we all come into the world as babies breathing diaphragmatically naturally. It's our birthright. It's what we're meant to do. It's how we're built. If you ever watch a baby, Jeff, if you watch a baby, if you put them on their belly, you're going to see that their back goes up. And if you put them on their back, you're going to see that their front goes up when they breathe. That's diaphragmatic breathing. Yet most of us adults and even children walk around breathing with our shoulders going up and down and our chest, upper chest going up and down, which is a sign of vertical breathing, meaning that you're actually not engaging the diaphragm to the full extent that it can and should be, which is not just what you need to do for having a better voice, but it's actually, it affects all of your health. It affects all of your organs. It affects your energy. It affects energy flow. It affects oxygen. It affects everything. And we have all this entire society of people that don't even realize that they're not breathing the way they're meant to breathe. So anxiety goes into that. Stress goes into that. Lack of physical exercise goes into
that. What about violations, Paula? How does that show up in our voice?
Violations show up everywhere in your voice. You know, I'm big into combining lots of different modes of breathing, one of them being meditative breathing and chakra and a chakra clearing. Your first three energy centers, your bottom three, are survival emotion energy. Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about this in his books too. And a lot of people that have violation, have experienced violation and trauma, trap energy there. And it's very interesting to me as a voice coach that those three chakras, the lower, say you're right above your belly button, right below your belly button, and then your pelvic area, are the three areas that are called what we call breath support. Those are support muscles that support the diaphragm so that the diaphragm can do what it needs to do and the person has better control over their airflow, their breath velocity, their breath energy. And yet so many people have violation that actually inhibits those muscles from working. It inhibits the actual energy flow in that area, and that ends up affecting their breathing, which just worsens the whole vertical breathing thing for them. So it's very interesting. I can often work with somebody and watch how they breathe and be able to predict pretty accurately some of the traumas and the violations that they've experienced in their life just by watching them breathe.
I can do that as well. I can tell. I can also tell by their eye iris movement, their communication style, the ums and the wells, how that takes them 3 to 8 seconds to be able to articulate feelings into words. And this is why many people have no energy, E-N-E-R-G-Y. They lack emotional etheric energy because of the events that shape their feelings, which then also affects their voice. Now, it's not uncommon for you to encounter women who have a little voice. They have that voice that's up above, up in their upper chest, right below their neck. And you also see this in their physiology of how they hold themselves in. How do you assist someone that's got that repressed violation energy, that anxious, scared, doubt energy that's in their upper chest? What do you do to assist them to separate their feelings from the events so they can actually have depth, resonance, pitch, and especially tone, because most people don't have any tone in their voice or depth?
Absolutely, Jeff. Well, I'm a very, very intuitive and compassionate person. And so when I'm first working with somebody, whether it's on Zoom or if they're right in front of me, I'm watching very, very carefully different muscles that are working. And as I'm listening to people, I can also hear what's happening physiologically in their larynx, their voice box, as well as their bronchial tubes and their lungs. I hear this and I can literally visualize it at this point. Not something I could do early in my career, but with experience, you learn how to do that. And so I'm noticing and I'm putting together the puzzle piece of what is really going on with this person. And for women, Unfortunately, women typically experience a tremendous amount of violations in different types of ways in different areas of their life at different time periods.
Well, let's look at one of the most common ones, someone who's highly critical of them, a passive-aggressive perpetrator, narcissist, someone who's unpredictable. This creates a situation where the body begins to run the brain, then it shuts down the flow of energy, and then it affects the voice. And you've seen how many, it happens to some men, but it's more prevalent in women, how they hold their body in a very tight space that affects their voice. Then they enter a business that requires sales, branding, marketing, and articulating their feelings into words, whether spoken or written. What insight do you offer to someone, like minute one, day one, so that they can start to let go?
One of the first things I do, Jeff, is give them permission, because most women, including myself back in the day, don't give themselves permission to have a voice, and most women don't even realize until they're working with somebody like me or you, somebody who's coaching them through and really observing, they don't even realize that they're not giving themselves permission. They have been so conditioned to stuff their voice, to stuff themselves, to stuff their needs often, that they don't even realize that they're stuffing their voice. And they do it in many different ways. Some people literally throw the tone into the back of the throat and they're like eating their words. Some people end up not having inflection where they're actually speaking with tones that are in a very, very narrow range of pitches. And that makes them almost monotone sounding. It's almost like they're subconsciously trying to not be heard. They've been taught perhaps to not be heard or to be seen and not heard. And so people do different things with their voices subconsciously, I think due to the conditioning that they've grown up in, and they take it with them into adult life, and then they can't understand why. See, why am I not recruiting people, or why am I not getting speaking gigs, or why am I not being chosen to be a presenter at my job? Why am I not having an advanced position in my career to be a leader? And a lot of times it's because they're just coming off, their breath energy is so low that it affects how effective they are with communicating with other people. So they end up getting passed up, which then, of course, just reinforces the initial spot that they were in. It just reinforces that they should be quiet, and it just perpetuates itself until something happens that makes them seek out a coach to help them.
Paula, you're very candid and objective. I've been your coach for 2 years, so I'm honored to have been through a lot of your own personal letting go. And I know that even though you had a very successful career, you went through a lot of your own challenges. Even though you're a voice coach and have a voice, how did your own voice and creativity get stifled in your career? And what have you been doing to let go of the cause that created the effect of some of these events? Because you're a walking example of a woman in recovery, in process, letting go on command as you deliver.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And when I was little, honestly, I started working with you, Jeff, and I think I've told you this. I always, up until 2 years ago, would say, oh, I'm basically a shy person because people think I'm so extroverted. I was literally qualifying myself as a shy person. And it was on one of our first sessions, Jeff, that I had an aha moment. And I went, wait a minute, I'm not a shy person. I'm a very extroverted, open, communicative person. I was shamed into being a shy person. I was shamed.
Can you qualify that, can you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was the fifth child of five. I was the child that was not supposed to happen. I was the oopsie baby. There were four kids in a row, and then I came along 14 years later. And my father was not keen on having another child, and I'm sure I felt that energy when I was very, very young. Then my mother actually died of cancer when I was 10, so it was just my father and I. And my life became all about taking care of my father.
Who also was, by the way, exhausted by the time you come along, right?
Who was exhausted by the time I came along, yes, raising four children that he was very involved with, absolutely. So it was one thing after the other that led to me squishing my voice. And because, as you've taught me, these things get stored in your body energetically. Even at 50 years old now, I have to be constantly conscious. I've trained myself to become much more conscious than I was before I started working with you, so that I can catch myself when I start to stifle myself. It might come in the way of on my health and wellness team. I'm one of the leaders, but I'm not the leaders. You know, I might take a step back and say, well, it's not my place to do that. And then I have to remind myself, hell yes, it is. Absolutely. This is my own business. This is my own life. This is the way I need to lead the people that I want to lead. This is how I can work the best. So I find myself now, my biggest lesson now has been learning to be less self-critical and learning to give myself permission to fully come into my own power. To not be the counterforce to somebody else's force, and to allow things to flow instead of being a control freak like I had been.
How did some of this manifest in your body? The violations and the events that shape feelings that really stifled your own creativity while you're being creative.
How did that show up? How does that show up in my body?
How did it show up?
Oh, a ton of anxiety, a lot of gut issues. I went through a time, which thank goodness I'm over. Most of my 20s and my 30s were spent having pneumonia and bronchitis, sore throats, throat.
Which is contradictory for a musician.
Absolutely. And it would get in the way quite a lot. In fact, when I was 23, I had a vocal injury my first year teaching in the public schools. I did not know my limits, and I had been sick. I had bronchitis for the umpteenth time. I kept teaching, kept singing throughout it, and I ended up with zero voice, like not one speck of a voice was there. And that forced me to stop. But when I went back to start to try to sing again, I would sing, but instead of having one note come out, two notes at the same time would come out, which is not the way the voice is supposed to work. So it turned out that I actually had developed scar tissue on one vocal cord. So right before I started my master's degree at Florida State, I had to be, my first 6 weeks of college, I had to not speak at all to allow my voice to recover. And that was when I realized that I better really take my own voice seriously and learn how to protect it. So now I'm extremely good at helping people understand how to protect and preserve their voice. But throughout my 20s and my 30s, as I was basically unwinding and undoing a lot of traumas and violations that I experienced in my younger years, I found myself getting sick all the time with throat and chest infections of all sorts, which would then get in the way of my singing and my career, which was then an excuse to not sing as much. And I finally was able to conquer that, believe it or not, in my 40s. It took me that long to stop getting sick all the time. And now I look back on it with what I understand now, and I know that there was a psychological impulse to quiet myself down and to take myself out of the game, because that's what happens when people are violated. And that was coming out in my physical body.
So in essence, if you didn't find someone to violate you, you'll violate yourself.
Absolutely. Sabotage all over the way.
That's classic force counterforce, the dichotomy that force must find adversity, force must find conflict, force must find a perpetrator, and if I can't find one, I'll create one in myself. That becomes a mind-body connection. Then you also said you had gut issues. Now, you have become an expert at this. I mean, you are really good at this. You assist many of your students to understand cause and effect, because you are becoming your own best student. Speaking of one of your best students, he's one of my best students, Dennis Snyder. You know Dennis,
yes.
Correct?
I love Dennis, yes.
All right, so Dennis is a drummer, and so you've assisted him in not only his voice but his drumming. So Dennis had never sang before, and I had suggested to Dennis that if he can't find a band in Los Angeles, start his own. It was my suggestion that he sing, and I actually, because of my relationship with Dennis, I actually hired you to be his coach for 1 hour with my own money, because I wanted Dennis to perform admirably at my events. You've also coached another one of my singers, Robert Grijalva, who has been a stage performer with members of Pablo Cruz, Greg Raleigh, the original piano player and a singer of songs with Journey, among many other people. So you have coached my musicians. Now, Dennis is one of your best students. What specifically did you do with Dennis, someone who's never sang before, and then he crushes against all odds at my event without a guitar, without a drum? What did you do with him to bring him to where he could sing that well?
Dennis is so fun to work with because he is so he's so willing. Dennis is so willing. So he really listens to what I was asking.
He doesn't have excuses, is what it means. He doesn't say, but.
Yeah. Exactly. It's zero excuses. Zero, zero, zero. Everything was, yes, Paul, I understand. Okay, I understand. Great. It was, you know, very, very effective. So we made great use of that time. What I had to do first with Dennis, because he was not a singer, so I could not ask him, well, what is your register? What is your range? What is your tessitura? Things that I could ask professional singers. They can just tell me and I can start. I could already be prepared before I start, but Dennis wouldn't know that, not being a professional singer. So I actually had my Zoom lesson with him, since I'm in Connecticut and he's in California. I had my computer at my piano in my piano studio, and I had to test his voice, find out where his range was, where the strength of his range was. And then I had to look at Against All Odds, and I realized that Against All Odds was not at all in Dennis's range. So what I had to do was something called transposing. I had to sit in the studio.
Go slow. What does that mean? It wasn't in Dennis's range for people who don't understand voice.
Oh, sure. In other words, Phil Collins, Against All Odds, sits very high in a male vocal range. I can sing it as a female, and I'm a soprano, meaning I have the highest type of voice.
Can you give a brother a hand here? That's my favorite song, so I asked Dennis to sing that. Could you give me a couple bars of that?
Of Against All Odds?
Of course, on command.
Oh, goodness. Oh, you're really going to put me on the spot here, aren't
no,
you?
No, Paula, I'm not putting you on the spot. I'm asking you a question.
Absolutely. Could I?
Your brain is creating a placebo effect to feel on the spot.
Yep. So, so you want me to sing it in my range?
Yeah, of course, however you want to sing it. Just, it's on command.
Awesome. Take a look at me now. There's just an empty place. But you coming back to me is against all odds. And that's what I've got to say.
My hands are on my heart, Paula. I felt that
Thank
good.
You.
That's all I wanted to hear. That was a muscle memory. Paula,
yeah.
I saw that movie when it came out. I mean, here's the story on that.
Yeah.
I saw that movie when it came out. James Wood and Jeff Bridges, they're driving a Porsche and a Ferrari. They're racing down Sunset Boulevard. So I researched exactly where that was. I took a picture of that in my memory. And in less than 1 year, I was on Sunset Boulevard in a rental Porsche driving myself that exact situation. That's what having a vision, that's what creativity, that's what innovation is. And so that song has forever been etched in my conscious unconscious. So I asked Dennis if he could sing that song. Dennis goes, absolutely, Jeff. You know how he is.
Absolutely.
He didn't go, well, I don't know how to sing. He didn't say, I've never sang before. He goes, I don't even know the words. He, in 2 weeks, crushed that song. You weren't there, but you'd be proud of him. He's going to do it again at the Protégé Writer Speakers Workshop. Now, once again, that was on command. Now, that was a good lesson for anyone listening, because you said, I'm putting you on the spot, and I go, no, that was your unconscious creating a placebo effect to fulfill a feeling, and so you overcame being on the spot. Do you understand? That was great how that worked. Your own memory brought back right back, and you crushed that in one verse. That was awesome. So that was a great lesson for people to understand how to overcome anxiety in the moment, perform on command. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And thank you.
You know, Matt Smith is on the line tonight. I've really watched Matt transform, as I have Joe DiBianca. But Matt is an expert at NLP. I know you know Matt. So Matt really understands a lot about how to use words and how words are power. Now, in songwriting, a great songwriter writes a hook. Would you share with people a little bit about what that means? Because that also shows up. And a content writer knows how to write a hook and knows how to write great content. What's the value of writing a hook in a song, a lyric or a limerick?
The hook is the most important part of the song or anything else that you write. It's basically the easiest way to think of it is the hook is the piece of the music that the person is going to take away and remember. Even if they've forgotten everything else, they're going to remember that.
You mean like a little ditty about Jack and Diane?
Yes, exactly.
Two American kids living in the heartland. Jackie, want to be a football star. Diane, a debutante, backseat of Jackie's car. Now, they're sitting on the Tasty Freed sucking down on a chili dog. Now, if you've ever been in the Midwest, I mean, that paints a picture. You can see that at the end of winter sitting on a cold bench having a chili dog at a Tasty Freeze, and they're 17 and 16. Oh, life goes on. Now, that is American poetry. Would you agree?
Oh, yes. That's fantastic writing.
And then Woody Guthrie. I mean, who cannot remember This Land Is Your Land?
Oh gosh, yeah. And it's been used everywhere in everything, every genre.
And then Kris Kristofferson writes for Janis Joplin, Me and My Bobby McGee.
Mm-hmm.
Busted Flat in Baton Rouge, Waiting on a Train.
Oh yeah.
And then any Johnny Cash song. I mean, you remember Johnny Cash. I mean, there's just American poets that perform music. Now, not only do they write it, but they can take it, so they can create on command.
Yeah.
What insight do you have as we start to wrap up the call for someone who really wants to take their voice to the next level and really find their voice, and then I'll let you offer how people can get a hold of you?
Sure, absolutely. I think one of the hardest parts of people being able to find their voice on their own is that when we hear ourselves, we do not hear ourselves at all the way everybody else around us hears us. We're hearing ourselves from the inside out, and then we're also hearing the sound bouncing off acoustically of whatever room we're in coming back at us, and then our ears are hearing that, and our brain is unwinding that, you know, that puzzle of sound. Other people hearing us, that's the more accurate way that we sound. That's why most people, when they record themselves, go, oh, I hate the way I sound. I don't want to listen to that. And that's why. So, for instance, with singers, if even though I've been singing for well over 40 years now, professionally for 30 years now, if I have a gig that I'm hired for, if I'm going to go do a gig someplace, I hire a vocal coach myself. Some of the greatest opera singers out there, they don't do a gig without a vocal coach.
Why is that, Paula?
You need somebody else to be your ears. And one of my best voice teachers that I had in my 20s, Joan, she said that to me. she would say to me, Paula, stop listening, stop listening. Because I would analyze myself in the moment, and it was inhibiting my sounds. So she would say, you're technically completely perfect, but there's no soul in what you're singing because you're spending so much time analyzing. And she looked at me and she said, you pay me to be your ears. You stop listening. And that was a breakthrough for me as a singer. So that's what I offer with people. I am able to hear people objectively. People cannot hear themselves objectively at all. I can't hear myself objectively either. It's just the way we're built. So one of the things that I assist people with is their body energy, what I call power posture, understanding how to address the audience. What I'm finding with my clients is they're all over the place in different types of careers. Some are network marketing people, some are professional speakers, some are sports announcers, some are financial people. And so what I do with each person is different depending on what their goal is and where they're, what starting point they have. But the thing that's in common is that everyone goes, oh, when they start to breathe and that diaphragm starts opening up and their chest cavity starts opening up and their rib cage starts opening up, they just feel relaxed. I've had even some people, women especially, just break down and start crying.
That is amazing. How can someone reach you tonight that's listening, or someone that is listening to the podcast? Because we have over 4,000 downloads in the podcast over a period of a month, Paula. So someone's either listening to this live or they're listening to this on a podcast. How can they reach you for one of your services, and what do you have to offer tonight?
Absolutely, Jeff. I like personal contact with people, so two of the best ways that they can reach me, well, three really, there's three best ways. They can send me a Facebook message, and I'm Paula, I believe it's Paula Jean Penna, Paula J-E-A-N Penna, so facebook.com/PaulaJeanPenna, or just look up Paula Penna, there's not very many of us. They can also call me at 860-707-0107, or even better yet, send me a text message. And the third way that they can get in touch with me is by my email. My personal email is paulajpenna@gmail.com. So it's PaulaJPen as in Nancy, N as in Nancy, @gmail.com. I like the personal contact with people.
Outstanding. So proud of you, Paula. Thank you for being on tonight's call. I'm looking forward to seeing you in the very near present, right around the corner. I know that we're going to be connecting at many events. For anyone who wants to get a hold of Paula, she gave you great insight there. Paula Penna, thank you very much for being on tonight's call. This is Jeffrey Combs, host of More Heart Than Talent Mindset.
Thank you for listening to the More Heart Than Talent Radio. If you enjoyed today's content and would like more insight and education into prospecting and closing sales, head over to goldenmastermind.com/free and download the Customer Personality Cheat Sheet. It's designed to shortcut the process so you can finally close sales by knowing exactly what to say to the personality you are connecting with. To download it now, go to goldenmastermind.com/free.